being and participating in this really has helped me way more than I can even probably help you, but also constitutes that when you receive help and ask questions, you actually help that other person. And remember, the way that we help other people feel capable and able is to ask them for help. And there's not enough people asking for help today at all levels. So I appreciate you being here. We got books for everybody if you'd like. What's up, Joey? So as always, any questions you have, I can handle. So 0 to 1 is the hardest. The first question is always the most appreciated.
I got you.
Yeah.
Question is, why are mindset and non-negotiables so important rather than what is your strategy for making money? Why do you place such great importance on mindset and non-negotiables rather than the technical money making things that people?
Because mindset and non-negotiables create behaviors, and behaviors are what create outcomes. Strategies are aligned with an outcome based off of a certainty that doesn't exist. So many people live their lives under the context that they actually know what they don't know. And so with this combination of wisdom and faith, I work from a position of humility that says the only thing I can control are the behaviors of today in alignment where I think I want to be, because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't even know if it's going to be tomorrow. And so for me, when I created a construct that wasn't attached to outcomes in my own life, I'll be happy when, or I'm so smart, I know exactly how to make this happen. When I realize that I am already, what am I doing to interfere with it? And concentrate on behaviors. The number one thing that creates outcomes is consistent behavior. In order to have consistent behavior, you have to take this uncertainty out of the equation. So you mentioned mindset and non-negotiable behavior. You can't have non-negotiable behavior for all 24 hours. So I start with the easiest thing to be non-negotiable with is sleep, because no matter how much you don't want to sleep, you're going to sleep. You might as well do it really well, because it should be about a third of your life. So for me, 2/3 of my non-negotiable behavior, because I believe you can have about 12 hours of non-negotiable behavior and 12 hours of uncertain behavior, circumstantial behavior, that will be prioritized according to where you think you want to be or better day by day, without being ignorant and arrogant, meaning you know you don't know what you don't know, stop pretending you do. And parents are the worst at this. I'm a victim of this still. Like, I hear myself talk to my kids, and I'm like, you hypocritical, ignorant, arrogant piece of shit. You're projecting your insecurity on your daughters because you don't want them to get hurt. So you're giving them advice so they don't get hurt instead of telling them, I really don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but here's the experiences I've had. And if you want to take the risk of getting hurt, then go ahead, ride a motorcycle with no helmet. But there's a risk of getting hurt if you do so. That's a different approach of mindset in unconditional or non-negotiable behavior. So for me, 8 hours of sleep and then 4 hours of the most important things, an additional hour on my health, additional hour with my family, time with my faith, my finance. I study time and study relativity. What does study mean? Pay attention and give intention to the activities that are relative to where I think I want to be or better. Most of the huge successes of my life, I can't explain how they happened, but I know they were somehow tangentially or coincidentally related to the behaviors that I had. The most money that I've ever made are not from some sort of economic strategy. They're from consistent behavior that created options, opportunities, and touches of favor that were totally uncertain and coincidences. And it was like this fluke thing where someone said, oh, you know, I'll give you an example. I got super drunk at the Masters the first time I went. I 12 cups in my hand of these, they were 50 cents at the time, and I'm so hammered, and I walk out of the gate, and there's these two tables with two girls. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're selling condo conversions. I'm like, right on the Augusta National? Yeah. I'm like, how much is a deposit? $1,000 each. Look at my pocket, I gave $2,000 cash. I'm like, I'll take two. Ended up two of the best real estate investments I've ever made in my life. Now, I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars doing research and strategy on building and buying a golf course, which literally lost me millions of dollars. Ignorant arrogance, ignorant ignorance. So for me, I'm controlling my behaviors. I'm always controlling my behaviors, knowing that half of my behaviors can be controlled. They can be non-negotiable. Now, the other half are fun because I'm just taking the circumstances of the day, the interest rates, the weathers, the arguments, and I'm reprioritizing day by day in alignment or divine direction of where I want to be. So mindset is everything. And one more thing about mindset. Mindset isn't just finding the light, the love, and the lessons and things. It's the God-given, co-creative, commanding power of God of being able to what? Give meaning. See, one of the coolest things about being human beings is we can give meaning to everything we see. So, you know, one of my oldest friends here, and I could give meaning when she called me, I saw her name, I could say, oh my God, she still thinks I'm the biggest 18, because she looks younger, but she's a few years older, and I had older friends, and I remember I got invited to a prom dance. I was an 18-year-old with all 22-year-olds, and I was the idiot that spilled my red wine all over her white dress before the prom. Or whatever it was, I'm thinking, oh God, she's calling to tell me something. She saw a video and thinks I'm still an idiot. That was the meaning I could have given it. But instead, that wasn't the meaning. It was like, oh my God, I'm so excited because I'm sure that she knows that I've changed from the 18-year-old I was. And maybe I can be of service or value to her. Someone who I went to college with that tried to mentor me, tried to teach me, was kind to me, even though I spilled red wine all over. Anyways, those are the type of things, though, that mindset is so important. Because remember, the only thing that will limit you is the meaning you give your past. It will affect your self-image. You'll never overachieve your own self-image. And so if I would have given my bankruptcy this loser punishment, like a lot of people do, I would never be here 18 years later. But instead, it took a little while. I gave it this extraordinary meaning that maybe I had a better place to be, a better position to be in. And other people who I love gave me that advice that, like my mom, my wife especially, that, hey, here's an opportunity for you to start over, take stock in who you were and what you want to become, and let's do this right. Because no one's taking away your skills. No one's taking away your knowledge. We just have to redefine and recalculate your desire in a divine direction. Stop using your desire to interfere with your potential. Use it to get to through your behaviors, discipline behaviors, where you want to be or better. Fair? Awesome. Fair. All right.
Who's next?
Chris. Yeah, please. That's what I figured. Yeah. That was like, I didn't remember throwing an egg at my wife when I was in the sixth grade, and she swears I did.
What do you do when your kids are facing the end of the dream that they've had since they're kids?
Yeah. Yeah, so number one, what do we do when we're coming to an end of the dream, let alone even worse, what do we do when one of our kids is coming to the end of the dream? How many kids dream of being professional athletes? Probably almost all. I was one of them. When I went to college, I thought literally I still had a chance because the senior that went to play for the Raiders and played 11 years. And I'm like, you know what? Nobody really knows how good I am, just like Vance Mueller, who's still a close friend of mine today. But I still believe, but when Christian Okoye ran me over and stepped on me, I realized, maybe I'm not going to be a professional football player. And that dream was hard, even though it wasn't realistic. So what we want to do is expand their dreams. They didn't end. It's the same way when I work with U.S. Our veterans and with athletes. They're always coming to me, Mr. Meltzer, help me transition. I'm like, there is no transition, bro. Yeah, but no transition. What we're doing is expanding the skills, the knowledge, and the desire that you had in this pursuit of being a professional athlete and expand it into something that's doing well, what's stable, or you think is doing well. When we start looking at the inventory, then they'll start realizing that professional athlete was an outcome. The skills, the knowledge, and the desire are who they are. And that there's no transition because your dream is only expanded to something bigger than being a professional athlete. And I'll tell you, one of the greatest lessons I learned playing college football, and I used to tell, you'll like this story, I used to tell everyone I was an average college football player, and Coach Weedoff, my coach, who's also a close friend, he's like, let's be honest, you were below average college football player. But what I learned by playing college football was I learned to love what I didn't like or love about what I loved. Talk about a valuable skill. Not everybody on earth can do that. If you want to have a great marriage, learn to love what you don't like or love about your spouse. If you want to be a great parent, learn to, Chris, I agree. You think I've learned, you imagine what my wife has learned. You know her. So, but also think about kids. I love when people are like, I love my kids unconditionally. And I'm like, you're so full of shit. There's no way any parent in the world likes or loves everything about their kid. But you learn to like or love what we love. It's easy when it's, you don't love something. It sounds ironic. When you don't love it, it's easy to learn to, like taking out the trash. Never loved it. It was easy to learn to love taking out the trash because all I had to do was say, I'm going to use that time to think about what makes me happy. But when you care so much about something, and it's much more difficult to learn to love what you don't like or love because you have this dream or you have this expectation, it's much more difficult. It's counterintuitive. And so understanding skills, knowledge, and desire. Here's another thing about kids. We have to explain to them, because we're total optimists when it comes to our kid. My mom like thought way too highly of me, and she used to say, you can do whatever you dream of, which is good to tell. But you also have to tell them that there's the human experience that your skills and your knowledge are your basement. Your delta is determined by your desire, your discipline of consistent, persistent practice, behaviors. But no matter how much you practice, how much you intend to be great, my basement in football was very low, and then my delta was great compared to where it was. So I will tell people, closest I've ever come to my potential, according to my skills and knowledge, was college football, because I had such a low. And then when I represented the greatest football players on earth, I realized that my delta would never even get me to the basement of most of the people I represented. And so I think with my kids, I always tell them, do whatever the hell you want to do. Dream whatever you want to dream. Just do your best, learn lessons, and have fun. But realize your skills and your knowledge are your basement. And life's about the delta anyway, so it doesn't mean you won't enjoy it, even if you only played baseball at Harvard and didn't go into the major leagues or the minor leagues. And when we start reframing and using the mindset with our children to create a reality to the desire and making sure as long as you do your best, learn lessons, and have fun, that's all we can expect from it. But your dream's not over. Your dream's just utilizing the capabilities you learned and developed. You know, if you're a college baseball player or football or a veteran, that's my biggest problem with vets is like they're so talented. And they're just conditioned to think of transition. And they're always talking about transitioning in the military. I'm like, stop saying that. Let's expand and let's take inventory of your skills and knowledge, this extreme discipline and desire that these people who have given us these freedoms, and then let's align it with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing well according to industries, careers, and jobs. All of a sudden, you'll see our vets not living homeless and killing themselves, but running companies and doing the things that they have invested in themselves for. Thank you.
Question for you. As you have done amazing things throughout your career, where you started to where you are now, how has your level of empathy adjusted or evolved? And is there a certain type of persona or person that you see that you're like more empathetic towards? Like, I was irreducible.
So what's interesting is I've always been an empath. So that's why I couldn't be a doctor. I was really good at math and science. But the minute I went to visit my brother at the hospital, I was like sick to my stomach. I could feel, even when my mom, like when I walk by hospital rooms or in the training room when somebody was hurt, I would feel them. So I was an empath, empathetic. So for me, how it's changed was instead of just being empathetic, feeling for other people, which tends to lean towards sympathy, I started to integrate it within the entire context of my values, which is one, you have to be gracious to be empathetic. You need to find the light, the love, and the lessons in everything, everyone, every situation, and every event, which is the setup because the gratitude gives you the perspective to be forgiving and empathetic. And so the purpose of empathy isn't to feel the way that you feel. It's actually to bring ease or to dissipate, dissolve, or disappear the dis-ease, emotional, physical, mental dis-ease that we create. And so for me, the shift or the paradigm shift for me was empathy wasn't just feeling and feeling sympathetic, walk a mile in your shoes, walk by and feel bad because you're poor or you're hurt or whatever is naturally in my empathetic nature. It was more, how can I spend more time at ease? Directly relative to accountability, which was, what am I doing? What am I doing to interfere with it, to be responsible, to attract it, to participate in this perception? So gratitude gave me the perspective to be empathetic. Empathy gave me ease, and accountability took control back with a predisposition of faith, not a disposition of faith. See, I've always had a disposition of faith of like, things go bad, I have faith, they'll be good. Things go bad, I'll pray to God. I remember my second year in law school, sitting on, my brother had passed away, I had $100,000 in loans, the economy sucked, and I literally prayed to God as a disposition of faith. God, if you allow me to pay off my law loans and buy my mom a house, I will shovel shit with my hands 12 hours a day, 6 days a week in gratitude. That's a disposition of faith. Instead of today, I would have said, thank you, God, for giving me this option, opportunity, and touch of favor by having my brother pass away, by having the struggle and pain of a perception. You're giving me an opportunity to prove how strong I am and illustrate the co-creative power that you've given me. Thank you for protecting me, promoting me. There's a difference between, God, please do this for me, or I will do this if you do this, compared to thank you for doing this, because I know you're I'm not smart enough to understand it. There's no evidence when I lost everything, including my mom's house. Trust me, the evidence was contrary that I would be here today, 18 years later. Completely contrary. But I took the perspective, thanks to my mom and my wife, of thank you, God, for taking this divine detour, because I was moving in the wrong place. I had forgotten what got me here. And now I have an opportunity to take all the lessons through gratitude, accountability, empathy, to forgive myself for the dumb shit I have done, like spilling wine that nobody ever remembers, and be able to live in spirit. Inspire.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions. You have a question?
Yeah, I did have one.
Be careful. This is like an auction. If you accidentally do this, yeah. I'm calling on you.
So I.
Because it won't cost you anything.
I've had a same friend group since college, and they're great friends. Love them to death. But I found that they're pretty limited in their ambition. They're pretty set in their ways, and I've found that that's been a limiting factor on myself.
Sure.
How do I expand beyond that? How do I get in the room with people with a little bit more ambition?
Well, you're here, so that's a good sign, right? Okay, so there's three criteria about the people we surround ourselves with to evaluate, because people have a frequency. There's very common when you come back to college, it's more common that you're not with your college friends anymore, because what happens is you come back from college or you come back to your college friends and you've elevated your frequency and it's uncomfortable. And what you don't want to do is lower back down to the lower frequency, because you've expanded your frequency, your awareness, from the experiences that you've had, whatever the differences were. When you start feeling this disconnect that you're feeling now, you have to realize there's three criteria to evaluate how much time am I going to spend with those people. So the first thing is relativity. Relativity means meaning. And so our families mean more to us. Our high school friends mean more. Our college friends mean more to us. So I do an evaluation of meaning, of relativity. How relative is this person, and is that realistic? So I will give you a true example. I was 55 years old at a baseball game, and there was a guy who I looked up to in high school. He was 2 years older than me, went to Stanford. I actually had hired him at Samsung. And I made the mistake, because I was a young executive, of thinking I was helping my friend by giving him a job he wasn't capable of doing. And then when the board fired him, he blamed me because I was the CEO. These are just situational knowledge. So this guy does not like me anymore. And he said, I saw him at the baseball game, and he said something and that hurt my feelings. And he said it behind my back. And then someone said, what'd you ever do to that guy? Because he just said, and it hurt my feelings. And I said to myself, how relative is he? What meaning am I going to give that? I'm accountable for what happened, but is he truly a friend? Is he someone I want to, is that the relativity I want? Then two, what association do I have? I had no association to him anymore. I used to, when I was in high school, have a huge association. He was a senior, I was a sophomore, I looked up to him, I saw him every day, he took care of me, he helped. That's a great association. But today at 55, when I was 55, there's no association, but yet he hurt my feelings. He started creating interference, insecurity in my life. And so relativity, association, and then this is the interesting one. How much are your friends feeding you? Now, I used to say if it feeds you, feed it. If it bleeds you, fire it. But I didn't understand what feeding meant. Because just because something bleeds you doesn't mean it's not feeding you. This is really important. Once again, my children, anybody that tells me your kids don't bleed you, you're lying. But that bleeding is what feeds you. My mom, when she passed the last few years, it bled, still does. It bled me, but it fed me more than anything. And so when we look at these relationships, relativity, the meaning I'm giving it, the association, which will clearly define the importance of it, and then, of course, how much am I being fed from? That guy wasn't feeding me. He was interfering. Yeah. That's just recording for us. Follow your dreams? Sure. Can I read it out loud? Perfect. I have $1 million idea, ADHD and dyslexia, learning company. There's only 9 learning companies in DC area, companies in the area. Public school field, millions of people leaning disabilities, believe that they're stupid, yes, because the school system told them. Do you have dyslexia? Yeah. I have a 3.3 GPA. Wow, congrats. And have dyslexia. My whole life took me 17 years to figure out how I learned. My dreams, go to Liberty University, it's where my golf course used to be, by a stockbroker and own a business and a learning company for ADHD and dyslexia, to be a real estate agent and learn about taxes and learn about crypto and stocks. My dad is accountant for the company, Clifton Larson Allen. I go to West Potomac High School, public school. I'm thinking I have a learned disability and a word first problem that affects you every day. My dreams and my business plan. Okay. Yes, I can help you. So, first of all, that's a great business. There's millions of kids. And so the first step at 17 is to ask for help. Find someone that's in a similar business that is successful and ask to work with them. Tell them your dream. I find this all the time with charities. People are so passionate about what they want to do. And they'll say, Mr. Meltzer, help me. I want to start a 501c3 about this. I'm like, slow down. Find an associated charity that's doing that already and go volunteer or work for them. Learn about it. Save yourself a whole bunch of time, money, building something that already exists, and then figure out how, when, and where. So for you, at 17, there's tons of businesses that are relative to this. For people that have autism, people that do have dyslexia. I'm sure I know the dyslexia one, but I'm sure there's companies for people that have ADHD. And so what you want to do is do research, find a company that's similar to the one that you want to build. Yeah, but go work for them, go intern for them, go learn about them. Learn what, these 6 things are what you want to learn. What you like about what they're doing, what you don't like about what they're doing. What's working for them, what's not working for them. I know. But you want to learn, and then you want to learn what you like and what you don't like, what you know and what you don't know. See, right now, you're concentrating on a very microcosmic view of what you know, but what's more important is to learn what you don't know. Exactly. So the first step, you asked me for help on your dream coming true, is, and I'll help you find companies and help you find an internship or a job in that area, is to learn from them what's working, what's not working, what you like, what you don't like, what you know and what you don't know, and figure out how to have a better company, and then you'll be successful and you'll have a business plan to capitalize that correctly. Does that sound fair?
Sure.
David Meltzer. Here, can I give you one of my books? Nick, you have a book for him?
Yeah, give me this.
Okay, give him 1 second. Yes, go ahead.
So,
it's just recording. Oh, I need it though.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
So my question is about scaling a business. I'm a law firm owner out of Connecticut.
I have about, you know, five or six employees between virtual and in-person. My question is, you know, my dream was always to have like a huge building with a bunch of staff members, run like a very large in-person firm. But I'm seeing the trend where a lot of people are kind of having these ghost offices, and they're, you know, I'm wondering if I should prioritize keeping my expenses low and just going.
Great question. Yeah, great question. Let me tell you a story about my dad. My dad was a great dad because I could watch what he did because I didn't want to do the same things. But my dad gave me one of the best pieces of advice. And the advice was this. If you don't like someone, this is before AI, before VAs. If you don't like someone, wish for them what you're wishing for yourself. Tons of employees and a ton of overhead. And they're going to tell you, like if I tell people, oh man, I wish that on you. I hope you have a ton of staff members in a big building. You're going to, oh, Mr. Meltzer, thank you so much. You must love me. No, I just cursed you, bro. Read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I talk about three things in life. Mercy, good book. Have you read Think and Grow Rich? Think and Grow Rich? I'll get you a copy of that. All right, so listen to me. Mercy, humility. You can see the relationship between mercy and humility, but frugality. This is from Napoleon Hill. There's a difference between scarcity and frugality. I was scarce even though I gave away a ton of money. I was scarce even though I bought a ton of stuff I didn't need to impress a ton of people I didn't like. Today, I'm very frugal. Sometimes I get in trouble with my wife because, right, I like to stay at hotels that are $112 and she likes $4,000 a night hotel. But I'm frugal. That seems like a waste still to me today. But I evaluated on making her happy, so the extra $3,000 a room is well worth it to me. Different reason though. So yes, what we want to do is have the least expensive way to create the capability to scale. So AI, VAs. For me, I use a ton of it. I haven't replaced one person with AI or VAs. But what I've done is I've replaced their capability with it so they can make me more money doing stuff that only they can do, that some person in Philippines can't do and some computer can't do. So I'm looking at capabilities, and that allows me to scale my business as I have. I went from 300 employees to now still having 300 employees total, but way more capability because of VAs and AI.
I appreciate that. My concern with that is losing, you know, personability of having coming into an office, actually interacting with people. And
good question.
Because, you know, I don't want to become, I have one person here, and it's not really uniformity or so, it's not the best customer service experience.
Yeah, so this is where people fool themselves, right? Well, if I use VA and AI, I'm not going to have somebody that's customer service. I have community managers. And believe it or not, when you focus a team on specific community management or customer service, that you actually give them better customer service, better personality, because that's all that person does. They're not a paralegal who also has to call the clients, right? We now facilitate, which means to make easy, this person whose capability is specific to customer service or specific to community management, and they actually provide more value in that personal touch. It's kind of like a personal shopper, right? Like how much, when you go into a high-end store, the people that are selling the stuff, they don't give you the same customer service or community management as a personal shopper. Hire a personal shopper for your company.
I appreciate that. I'd like to give you my cards. Maybe
I would love that.
I shot you a text earlier, so.
Thank you. Call me, too. All right, next question.
You know, when all the chips are down and when essentially nothing is working for you, how do you keep yourself at it? I remember you mentioned something happened in your past, and
yeah, I lost over $100 million. Yeah, my basement had a basement. I get it.
Right. In terms of the,
I lost my mom's house. That was fun.
Right, Dave. I mean, how do you keep yourself motivated? You know, because it's one thing to look back.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Retrospective, and vision is 2020, of course. But when you are in it,
yeah,
it's not as easy.
No, and it shouldn't be easy. So, for me, there's a difference between motivation and inspiration. So I use motivation to get me up and get me started, get me back up and get me back started. But that's not going to get me there. What's going to get me there is called inspiration. That's going to get me there. In order to have inspiration, you have to have wisdom and faith. You also have to understand linear time. One of the things about evidence that's missing in our lives or contrary to where we want to be is that we don't trust or have faith in our behaviors or ourselves or God. How could this be protecting me, promoting me, loving and perfecting me? This must be punishment. And when I feel punished, that's when I use motivation. And then I use faith to feel protected or be inspired in spirit with God going, I got this. I have to focus in on the behaviors, knowing that it's going to be about 1,000 steps to get me to where I want to be, even though there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary that I'm ever going to get to 1,000 steps. I also know that God time, infinite time, isn't linear time. So I know it's going to take 1,000 steps to get to where I want to be, even though there's no evidence and the evidence is contrary to where I want to be. But I also know I don't know how much time it's going to take me. But I do know this about time. It'll take about 90% of the total time, whatever the total time is, 1 week, 1 year, 10 years, 10 lifetimes. It'll take me 90% of the time just to be aware. In other words, just to be to 250 of the 1,000 steps, just to receive some evidence that I might actually get there. So what happens with that? 99% of the people quit before they get to 250 steps. Because not only does everybody else start piling on, you start piling on to what everybody else is piling on and telling yourself, this isn't worth it, it's never gonna happen. The sadder thing is in the next 5%, you get to 500 steps because of aggregation, acceleration, and compounding. It's the same as money. It just compounds, and people don't see how you get to 1,000 steps is not a linear construct. It's a compounding construct. So it takes 90% of the time to get to 250 steps and only 5% of the time to get to 500 steps. Meanwhile, of the 1% of the people that are left, 99% of those people quit of the 1% before they get to 500 steps. And the worst, which there's so many poems, stories, videos, memes, everything about this, the worst is 99% of the people of the 1% of the 1% quit before the next 5%, which makes them 1,000 steps or 100% of the way there. And then there's still people that quit before they get to 2,000 steps, 4,000 steps, and 8,000. It's not linear. It's compounding. Energy accelerates, aggregates, and compounds. It doesn't go 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. It aggregates, accelerates, and compounds. Money's the easiest thing. That's why I love Einstein, because Einstein really teaches us relativity, meaning, and time, but also the compounding effect of energy. That's what Einstein truly understood. And that's why he was the one that developed the rule of 72, which is a simple financial rule that would make anybody wealthy, just understanding that in a secure investment, it takes your money will double every 7 years. Most people aren't patient enough to realize the impact of doubling your money every 7 years, especially a 21-year-old. Because they get so many extra doubles. My money has doubled so many times since I've been 38 years old when I lost everything. So I've had 19 years since then, because I'm 57. So I've had almost three doubles. But what if I would have held that path when I was 21? So 21 to 28, one double, 28 to 35, 35 to 42. I would have already where I am today, and then it would be double, double, double three more times. It's not even close how much I would have. So don't quit. Motivation is different than inspiration. Behaviors will get you there, not outcomes. Last question.
All right, David. So obviously you work with a lot of successful athletes and entrepreneurs and people who are high performers. What do you believe is the fixed cost to success? And also, how do you deal with imposter syndrome, especially growing up not at the level you want to play at, and then I don't want to say arriving, but playing at a higher level.
So fixed cost would be time, because it's the only certain variable. So the only fixed cost is the 24 hours that you're given every day. That would be the only fixed cost or dependent variable that you can rely on, that I'm making prioritized choices of the usage of my 24 hours. That's why I divide it up into non-negotiable and negotiable behavior, because non-negotiable behavior takes the uncertainty of life out of it. And so that fixed cost would be time. So if you're focusing in on behaviors relative to time, how much time am I spending on consistent behavior? That's going to give you the aggregate acceleration and compounding of those behaviors to get you to where you want to be or better, not necessarily where you think you want to be, but somewhere better. Two, imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is based off the meaning of your past. God has given you a power of meaning. It's the power of relativity. For young people, I use this analogy. I see young people thinking they want to drive to be a millionaire or successful business, and all they're doing is looking in their rearview mirror, and they're wondering why they keep crashing. You cannot drive just looking in. What's the rearview mirror there? It's the glimpse to give you a meaning of the past to make sure you're in a better direction in the future. And you can control the difference. You can't control what's behind you in your car, but you can do it in life. So glimpse into the rearview mirror, and if you're giving meaning of the past that you're not worthy, you're not good enough, you're not going to make it, all the things that limit your self-image to then create a limitation of your future, it casts a shadow on your future. When you have imposter syndrome, it's a meaning of the past that you're limiting your future with. Because it limits your self-image. You'll never overachieve your own self-image. And if your self-image is, I'm not worthy, I can't do it, I'm lying to people, I really don't believe, of course you don't believe in yourself. There's going to be time, especially when you're young, that you are worried and fearful and separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful. All these things are just interfering with your potential. So for me, the cheat code is to find people in the position that you want to be in at a young age. Ask them for a direction. That's called wisdom. Read the right books. Get into the right room. That's called wisdom. And then have faith. For me, the imposter syndrome goes away when you understand I am not this is what I want people to think I am. And that's why to me, and I'm one of the last guys 20 years will be telling you, God is so important. And God is not a matter of science to me. Like, and I hate to sound this way, but I'm a perspective person. My God is how I live my life, which is the best option in alignment with where I want. So take past lives, for example. I don't ever tell anybody that I can prove to you you have past lives, but I love life. So my best option is to believe there's millions of lifetimes. If I didn't love life, I believe there's one life. Why would I want to believe in I got to do this again and again and again? Same thing with God. I tell everybody, I don't care what you call your God. You name it whatever you want, Jesus, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, Buddha. I don't care what you call your God. I believe in your God. If your God is bigger than you, loves you, protects you, promotes you, perfects you more than your mom, an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought, an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source that you're a resource of. If that's your God, the only reason I believe in that is it's the best option of what I think. I would rather take the perspective or have a meaning when shit goes wrong that God is protecting me, promoting me, loving, perfecting me, so keep on doing my best, learning lessons, and having fun. It's just the best option. And you trust me, you're enough. You're just interfering with it. All right, everyone, if you don't mind taking a group photo, I appreciate your time. Thank you again for helping me.